welcome to Animal Voices on CFRO 102.7 FM in Vancouver, also known as Co-op Radio, your commercial-free, community-based, and community-sponsored radio station. This program is presented to you by volunteer members of Earth Save Canada, Vancouver Humane Society, and the Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection Society. Alan Jensen is in the control room, ordering me around already, and Marge is in the... Marge is in the studio with me with her special guest, Karen Duncan, who represents the Vancouver Orphan Kitten Rescue Association, and we're going to be talking about kittens. What else? But first of all, we are going to talk a little bit about a report from GRAIN, which is a... let's see. This is my first time on the computer here. Whoops. I'm just... wrong way. Hang on a second there, folks. I'll get you in a minute. Yeah, GRAIN. They are... Don't you just love... GRAIN is an international non-governmental organization which promotes the sustainable management and use of agricultural biodiversity based on people's control over genetic resources and local knowledge. And we're going to be talking to a representative of GRAIN next week, Mr. Devlin Kuyak, and his report goes like this. And it is blaming the global poultry industry as the root of the bird flu crisis, or crisis rather. Small-scale poultry farming and wild birds are being unfairly blamed for the bird flu crisis now affecting large parts of the world. But this new report from GRAIN shows how the transnational poultry industry is really the root of the problem, and it must be the focus of efforts to control the virus. The spread of industrial poultry production and trade networks has created ideal conditions for the emergence and transmission of lethal viruses like the H5N1 strain of bird flu, considered so dangerous. Once inside densely populated factory farms, viruses can rapidly become lethal and amplify. Air thick with viral load from infected farms is carried for kilometers, while integrated trade networks spread the disease through many carriers, such as live birds, day-old chicks, meat, feathers, hatching eggs, chicken manure, and animal feed. Everyone is focused on migratory birds and backyard chickens as the problem, says Mr. Kuyak. But, good gammons. But they are not effective vectors of highly pathogenic bird flu. The virus kills them, but is unlikely to be spread by them. For example, in Malaysia, the mortality rate from H5N1 among village chicken is only 5%, indicating that the virus has a hard time spreading among small-scale chicken flocks. H5N1 outbreaks in Laos, which is surrounded by infected countries, have only occurred in the nation's few factory farms, which are supplied by Thai hatcheries. The only cases of bird flu in backyard poultry, which account for over 90% of Laos's production, occurred next to the factory farms. So the evidence we see over and over again, from the Netherlands in 2003 to Japan in 2004 to Egypt in 2006, is that lethal bird flu breaks out in large-scale industrial chicken farms and then spreads. The Nigerian outbreak earlier this year began at a single factory farm owned by a cabinet minister, distant from hotspots for migratory birds, but known for importing unregulated hatchable eggs. In India, local authorities say that H5N1 emerged and spread from a factory farm owned by the country's largest poultry company, Venkateshwara Hatcheries. A burning question is why governments and international agencies like the UN Food and Agriculture Organization are doing nothing to investigate how the factory farms and their byproducts, such as animal feed and manure, spread the virus. Instead, they are using the crisis as an opportunity to further industrialize the poultry sector. Initiatives are multiplying to ban outdoor poultry, squeeze out small producers, and restock farms with genetically modified chickens. The web of complicity with an industry engaged in a string of denials and cover-ups seems complete. Farmers are losing their livelihoods. Native chickens are being wiped out, And some experts say we're on the verge of a human pandemic that could kill millions of people. Mr. Kuyak concludes, when will governments realize that to protect poultry and people from bird flu, we need to protect them from the global poultry industry? And if you want to read this report, it's at www.grain.org. That's G-R-A-I-N, and lots of very, very good information on that. So that we'll be talking to Mr. Kuyak next week. He's based in Montreal, and we'll be talking to him at 12 o'clock, so stay tuned for that. Now, let's get on with the rest of the show, and Marge will introduce her guest, Karen Duncan, of the Vancouver Kitten Rescue Association, and we'll be right back. This is Animal Voices, 102.7 FM, right here in Vancouver.
Thank you, Ellen. Now, our guest today is Karen Duncan, who is president of the Vancouver Orphan Kitten Rescue Association. Welcome to Animal Voices, Karen.
Thank you, Marge.
Very nice to have you back.
Thank you. It's
been a considerable time since you were last in the studio with us, but I don't know how that happened.
Well, we all get busy.
Absolutely. Now, could you tell me how you got involved with rescuing kittens?
I've always been surrounded by animals, and animals seem to find me when they need help. And I started volunteering for various groups, Meow Aid in Vancouver, and I fostered for the SPCA. And I realized that there were a lot of kittens that needed help, and shelters are not the place for kittens. They die easily from a cold, and they need 24-hour care, generally, if they're very tiny kittens. So a friend of mine and I started Vancouver Orphan Kitten Rescue, and we became a registered charity in 2001. And we have just grown and grown and grown. We are well-known by the SPCA. We have kittens handed to us all the time by them because there is no one there to bottle feed round the clock for little guys. And we just try and get the under 8 week ones out of the shelters as fast as we can. They go to the main desk and then they come to us as fast as we can get somebody over there to pick them up, or they kindly deliver them to my home.
Are you the only such group in Vancouver? I know individuals sometimes will care for kittens, but what
individuals
about...
Individuals do. Uh-huh. Other groups do care for kittens, but primarily adults. We set ours up... We do get some adults. We try not to. We try to pass them to the other groups because we are so overrun with kittens and so busy, and they're so intensive that we try and stay away from any kind of cat rescue. But other groups, saying that, other groups do look after mums with kittens or kittens, and they manage to get them into foster homes and away from the shelter.
I guess it's a blessing when you get the mother with the kittens,
yeah,
isn't it?
It makes it a lot easier on us. We little tiny kittens have to be fed every 2 to 3 hours around the clock.
That is a terrible imposition on a person's life, isn't it?
It takes certain people to do that, and we have we have over 150 fosters now, foster homes. Not all of them fostering at the same time. Some go away, some adopt, some need a rest, you know. But and then there's a core group of bottle feeders, and those are people that can either take them to work with them or are at home working. And myself and a few others, and basically I have bottle feeders all. I've had them all year this year. I haven't stopped.
Why is it? Is it usually that way, or is it just because of the mild winter?
It was worse this year because of the mild winter. There were kittens being born on the street. We had kittens sent down from Penticton. Nobody could look after them up there, seven of them, right at New Year's. But kittens were being born on the street throughout the winter this year, and we'd get calls from people, or the SPCA would send people on to us for help.
Do you ordinarily have a bit of a break during the winter?
Yes, mm-hmm. And my bags under my eyes tell you that I didn't have a break this year. I did go away for a week, and I slept the whole time.
Oh, really? Well, fortunately, you did get away for at least a week.
Yeah, that was amazing. First time in years.
Now, you get kittens referred to you from the SPCA. Are there other groups and other ways?
Other rescue groups call us for help. And in fact, Critter Care in Penticton was who called us with the ones that were sent down by cargo. They were sent by Air Canada. We went down and picked them up. Little guys, about 7 days old.
Really?
Other groups, people, our name is handed out by vets when there's orphan kittens. A lot of the vets know about us. Animal Emerge knows about us. So each year, we're getting more. In the last 2 years, we have looked after over 700 kittens and cats, and primarily kittens, throughout the year, each year. So it's way up. We started with maybe 100 and something, and now we're doing 700. And that's just us. There are lots of other rescue groups, so the problem is huge.
Yeah,
it needs to stop.
And we've got to talk about how it can be prevented, mm-hmm. too, because it's not a happy situation, is it, to have all these little creatures homeless, really, until you
Well, it's torture
them,
for the animals, for the mother cats who fret and worry and, try and protect their babies. We had one last year that came in that had been skunked the day before we got her. She got to come to my house. Oh, boy. But she'd been protecting her kittens, and she stood right in front of them and got it full in the face. And, that's just small potatoes for what they're looking at. They get attacked by, birds of prey. They get attacked by coyotes, by dogs, by people. It's an ugly world.
They all survived the skunk anyway, did they?
They did. And they all got great homes.
What did you do? Use tomato juice?
I couldn't even touch her. She was feral. She sounded a lot like that opening cat in the opening. She was but she tamed. We got her calmed down and eventually got a great home, which is amazing. It not every feral cat can be tamed, but some of them can.
Uh-huh.
But I couldn't touch her. I just had to leave. It was summer, and I left all the doors open. She was in a kennel, and I just had to keep airing her out, and it finally died down.
I see. Oh, that would not be a pleasant experience, for sure.
No.
Do you have? You must be at times get to a point where you cannot accept any more. You just filled up.
There are times. Our huge time is July, August. It's just madness. And I can get 3 calls in a day from the SPCA saying, come down here right away. If they're older kittens and I think that they can handle it, they stay there if we're full. But we need fosters constantly. We supply everything to the fosters. They don't have to buy supplies. They don't have to buy food. We want the cats to be eating properly so they get strong, and then we adopt them out at 8 weeks. If we've got adopters. And that's the other thing, is we run out in July, August, September. It jams up. And people are going away or whatever. And that's the time we have the most, huge numbers. So we need to get them homes then, or fosters. Winter is not a time for kittens. We had some them throughout, but not masses like in the spring, summer.
And sometimes you have to keep them longer than 8 weeks.
Yes.
Why is 8 weeks the best time?
It seems to be some of them, if they're not doing well, if I feel that they're not littering properly or not eating well, we'll keep them a bit longer. It depends on how they're doing, and we really go group by group. But that's the time when the mom usually is getting a little tired of the whole deal and maybe going into heat again. Cats go into heat immediately. Mm-hmm. So that's why there's so many litters on the street. They finish with one group and then they're on to the next. Not unheard of that we get in a cat with her older kittens and a new litter of kittens. And then the older kittens are edging towards being able to breed too. And that's how a colony just blows up in a matter of a few months, and you have hundreds in one spot.
So you're constantly trying to educate people about spaying and neutering their cats.
We work with Urban Lions and do a tremendous amount of trapping. The SPCA hands people on to us about that, too, and other groups and our website. We get a lot of people calling for help saying, I've got a wild cat under my porch with kittens. We go out and trap. We get the mum in, the kittens in, get the mum spayed. And if she's totally wild and the people are willing to feed, we would rather release her there, because the shelters that take the wild cats are jammed. Hundreds. I mean, there's Richmond homeless, 600-700. Forgotten felines, you know, 300. There's so many shelters that are jammed, and there's no more places, you know, unless we send them to barns or something. They're not safe on most of the streets. Sometimes there is a colony that's being looked after, and that's what you need. You need mm-hmm. a group of people to say, okay, we'll take responsibility for these cats. We'll get, you know, get them in. We trap them, get them fixed, get their shots, make sure they're healthy, check their teeth. All that costs money. And then if somebody's feeding and keeping an eye on the colony, that's great. But we need help trapping, too.
Yes.
So it's a huge job, night trapping, where you need people to drive to the vet. We drop them off at night. So we need a lot of help with that.
Maverick cats do that kind of thing, don't they?
They do that, too. I haven't talked to them lately, but Urban Lions has been doing a mass amount in Vancouver and Burnaby. Just, mm-hmm. I mean, they're constantly busy and constantly looking for people to help with the trapping.
I see. That's a job in itself.
It's a huge
same,
job.
Similar to feeding, isn't it? Because
yes.
you have to be there. You can't
yeah.
just put a trap out.
No,
and
no.
It.
Because
yeah.
you have people that don't understand what you're doing, that you're trying to help the cats. And so the trappers have had traps stolen, have been yelled at by people. So you always go in teams. The police often come out because you're creeping around in an alley. And they're very happy to see us out there trapping and helping these cats. Because it's dangerous for people that own cats and let them out, mm-hmm. which they shouldn't. Mm-hmm. We'll go into that later.
Mm-hmm.
and it's just nasty for these cats. They're breeding. They're ill. They're, you know, going after birds and people, and it just gets nuts. So you need to calm the whole situation down, get a level number, and not allow them to breed anymore.
Yes, but then you have to get them spayed or neutered.
Yes.
That's the only way that
that's right.
it's the prevention is
yep.
it goes
and
down,
and the
it?
Reason
yeah.
so many are out there is we have certain areas where it's very busy, and it's areas where people move a lot, and you find that people dump their cats. They get a sweet little kitten. That's why free kittens, not a good idea to give your kittens away, because people do not value them. They dump them. When they're not cute anymore, they're on the street. We would rather have those kittens brought into us rather than dump them on the street. They need to be fixed. They can get pregnant at 5 months. So we get in so many young mums that are scared to death on the street, pregnant, huge, and they come to us. And they're just terrified, you know.
So and now how do you deal with that when you're placing a kitten? Do you have some stipulation that they must bring it back to you or
yes.
show proof that it has been spayed? Because they're a bit too young.
People, yes, we don't do pediatric spays. I'm just a little worried about that. It's too young. And our cats start with, they're a little weaker, some of them. So I don't want to do that. We have an agreement with Arbutus West Veterinary Clinic and Animal Wellness Veterinary Hospital. They do all our operations for us. We have a contract with the people that adopt. They pay an adoption fee to us, and that covers first shots, checkup, the fix, and the tattoo. And we give them lots of information. We're there. You know, they email us back and forth for advice, and you know, we take if it doesn't work out, and it doesn't happen very often, but something sometimes happens. You know, an allergy comes up later on, or people are moving. We take those animals back. We don't want them just dumped. So that way we ensure that all of our kittens are getting fixed and being looked after. We only adopt indoor homes because it is no longer safe on the streets for cats or kittens, with the coyotes primarily, and raccoons, skunks, crazy people, cars. Not a good place for cats anymore.
And your kittens have had a lot of effort and time put
That's
into them.
That's right.
Before
a
you
lot
place
of effort,
them,
time, money. You know, we love them. Our foster homes are wonderful. They treat them like their family. So we get wonderful. We have a success stories part on our website, and we get wonderful stories about our kittens who have started off in the most awful ways, mm-hmm. and there they are in this wonderful home, being loved to death. We try and place them in twos if they're kittens. They do much better as indoor cats with a pal. So they don't get destructive. They've got something to do during the day. And when you get home, they're not leaping on your face all night because they haven't had anything to do all day. They've got their buddy.
Right. Now, 8 weeks is a good time because the mothers had about enough of feeding them by then. But now, occasionally, and well, in fact, I've had the experiences of getting a kitten years ago that was only 6 weeks old. Mm-hmm. What is the disadvantage of placing them that early?
Well, you have to be much more careful with a six-week-old. Certainly our fosters look after them all the time. We give them the guidelines. We never let them go that young. But we do send them to foster homes. We ask the foster homes to keep them in a small room or a large kennel with a litter box in it so that they don't start having accidents behind your furniture. If you let a kitten run loose and it's not trained properly, and they don't really train, it's just habit. If you put the litter box right beside the nest, when they're tiny, tiny kittens, they climb out of the nest to keep it clean and go into the litter box, and it's habit. So that's what you need to do if you happen to have a very tiny kitten. You need to keep it in a small area, and if it starts going backwards on its litter, having accidents, you put it back in the box. If it's constant, you also need to get it into the vet and see if there's a urinary or some other problem.
The mother trains them, though, doesn't she?
Well,
if she has them long enough.
Somewhat. You know, what she does is generally her box is there. They watch her go in. Same as they watch her clean her face. I watch litters of kittens. They're so sweet. They line up and they watch the mom, and she cleans her face, and they do it. You know, they're watching and learning. So that's how they learn. She doesn't put them in the litter box. She does it. They watch. So what we do is if we're bottle feeding a litter, we feed them, and we have to make them go to the bathroom. You have to stimulate them with a Kleenex, and because that, you know, the mother would lick them, and we don't go that far. We love them, but not that much. So we get them going, and we start setting them in the litter. We have tiny litter boxes that we get donated from the hospitals. They're instrument trays, and they throw them out generally. They're plastic. They're perfect for kittens. So we set them in and stimulate them, get them going, and leave a little bit of towel in there, paper towel in there, so it smells, and they go back to it. It's all, you know, we've learned a lot through the years of how to get them going right, and you know.
I'm sure you have. And you have special formula for kittens,
we do.
Don't you?
We use KMR formula. It costs a lot, but it seems to be, I've tried other ones, and I go back to the KMR every time because it just is consistent. With little kittens, you have to be so careful because if they dehydrate, if they start getting the runs or something, it's big trouble. And so you have to feed them a proper food. They do not have cow's milk ever. We give goat's milk after a while sometimes. But we start mixing in food at around 3.5 weeks.
What is KMR anyway?
It's a powdered formula, like a baby formula, only
it's
for kittens.
Is it from cat's milk?
No, it's made, I don't know what the sources are, but it's very good. And we put in colostrum too, which keeps their bowels going and just helps what they don't get from their mother if we don't have the mum.
Now, when a kitten is ready to be placed, you probably have a list of people who want kittens.
Yeah, people send in. We work primarily now because it's gotten so big. We work with our website, so people go to our website. They see pictures of our kittens on the website, what's available, what's coming up, and they send in an application by the web. If they don't have a computer and can't borrow one, we have a message line, which I'll give you at the end, and they can phone in and say, could somebody call me? But we prefer the adoption application be done online, and then somebody phones them and talks to them some more.
What are you
very careful.
For? Yes, what are you looking for particularly?
Indoor homes is very important, that people realize that they can't just let a cat out on a balcony. They have to have screening, that they realize that it's an indoor cat is going to live 16 to 19 years. You need to think about that and where you are in your life. So we use our foster homes. I encourage young people that are maybe going to travel, move, do a lot of things to foster because they get the joy of these kittens and looking after them, but they can move on and later on adopt. So I don't encourage young people to adopt. I really don't. And,
well, how long would they have a kitten for, though, as a foster home? It probably just
depends on the age when it comes in. Bottle feeders, you have them for 8 to 10 weeks. A mom with kittens or a pregnant mom, you'll have her for, you know, a longer time. We often place 4 to 5 week olds that come in that are found, and so you have them till they're 8, 9 weeks.
So they have to be great.
People really enjoy the fostering, and that we provide them with everything really helps. So students can do it through the summer and have a lot of fun with it.
It's very special people who take the ones that are 4 weeks old, I imagine.
You have to just, you know, keep them contained again and follow what we have a handbook we hand out with them so that people, if they have questions, they go there and then they talk to us if
would
they're
they
not
be,
knowing.
Would they be able to feed themselves? We have to put the food out for them, mm-hmm. of course, but you don't have to bottle feed them at
not
4 weeks?
Not at 4 weeks,
no.
Generally. Some hold on. Some get, just like babies, they get attached to the bottle and they don't want to let go. But mm-hmm. primarily, they will eat out of plates. Now, they still have to be fed probably 4 times a day at that age. Mm-hmm. And you have to keep a close eye. You know, you don't just leave them for a whole day. You if you're going to work, fine, you leave enough food for them. But we carefully look at what the foster does, too, so that we match them with the litter that will work for them.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. So now you've got a placement. Say you have a placement application. You checked it over. They're willing to have it indoors, mm-hmm. and it's a kitten that is not going to be dependent on two-hour feedings
right.
and so on.
Right.
So that what other things do you look for?
We try and match the kitten's personality with the people, if you know what I mean. Like, you wouldn't want a very tiny kitten with a very lively toddler who won't understand that they can't squish the kitten. You know, you want an older cat that can defend itself, maybe a 4, 5, 6 month old. Or if, you know, and we look at each person individually. It depends on what the situation is. We do turn people down if we don't feel they're right for our kittens, and that's just the way it goes. I don't want to be just handing out kittens. I get enough handed to me where people haven't thought through. You know, they adopt from a store, for instance. We've got 3 or 4 from a, I won't even say who it was, but it was a pet store, where you should never buy pets. You should never buy pets. Don't encourage them. There's too many out there to be being bred. And you know,
are there such things as kitten mills?
Kinda, yeah. There's people that think they're going to make money. The only way they make money is raising them very cheaply, and they don't really make money. And it's not needed. There's too many.
And the kittens are probably not as healthy as they would be otherwise.
No, and they're not treated as well as we treat them, I'm sorry to say. We get a lot from that. See, I've got a little Persian in right now that we've just discovered has all sorts of things wrong with it, and it was because somebody thought it was cool to breed Persians, but they're huge maintenance. I need a special home for this kitten. You know, you have to wash them and do their eyes. We're going to be paying for an entropion eyelid. Its eyelash is growing into it. So we're paying for that and the spay and the whole thing. You know, you have to think before you do things in life. And that's one of the things people that just keep producing or allowing their animals to produce, they're not thinking about the good of the animals.
How do you manage to keep ahead of these veterinary bills and feeding bills and all the rest of it?
It's difficult. I mean, we do charge our adoption fee, but that nowhere covers, really. So we do a lot of fundraising. We had a very successful silent auction dinner last year at a restaurant on Broadway, the Wolf and Hound. It was great. We had lots of fun. We're going to try and do that again. We have 2 yard sales a year. We're, in fact, having another one in May, and we look for people to donate their things that they no longer need to us. So if they go to the website, they can write in and say, hey, I've got this, where would you like it dropped off? And we'll have lots on the website about where the yard sale will be in May. We ask for donations. We ask people to think of us and give us a monthly donation, anything to help. Everything goes to the animals. We do not pay anybody in our group. We're all volunteers. We spend hours and hours of our own time doing this.
And you are registered to charity.
We are.
Deductible on income tax.
Yes, we give tax receipts. And, people can also donate through United Way. We're listed with United Way. So if they have an office group or something and they have United Way as somebody that takes out money from your check each month, you can pick us. you know, and that's great. It's very exciting. So we need help. And we're also helping people by getting their cats fixed if we can't find a group that will do it for them. On our site, we have a list. On the front page, there's a button to push, a list of groups that will try and help people get their cats fixed for no cost if they can't afford it. Now, please, people need to use that only when they really need it, because we need these groups to help us. We can't do it all. But if we see free kittens, we phone the ad up and we get the kittens placed properly and we help the people get their cat fixed, because we don't want more. There's too many.
There are veterinarians, I'm sure, who are gracious enough to give special rates.
Well, our vets do to us, and there are low-cost vets. The SPCA will do free spays if you ask them. There's many groups that will help. So people just need to check with our website, and they can get the list from there. And remember that these cats can get pregnant at 5 months. They should not wait till after their first heat, because often something happens, and they're too young. It's very hard on them. I see it all the time. You know, it's very hard on them when they're having kittens at that age.
At that age, I mean, terrible. Yeah,
and they're scared.
Yeah. So that now, I know you need funds, and you have these activities coming up, and all this information is on the website.
Yeah.
Maybe you should just tell us that, and maybe we can even repeat it later on.
Okay. It's orphankittenrescue.com. All one word, orphankittenrescue.com. We also have a message line. It's just a message line. You do not reach a real person, but we check it every day, of 604-731-2913 if you don't have a computer. But the fastest way to get to us if you have questions is to go to our website and send in questions. We have a wonderful woman running our website. It's been designed by one of our volunteers here, Roberta, and we now have a database, which has saved us, because at any given time, we have hundreds of kittens dependent on us keeping track of them. Mm-hmm. So now with the database, we can figure out where everybody is, when they need to be fixed, if it's a mama or whatever, you know, and everybody's got a code number, so we can go through.
Good.
Can I ask a question?
Sure.
About food?
Yes.
Well, it's of particular interest to me, but you know, you're left with so many quandaries when you're trying to feed an animal.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to feed them the product of factory farming,
mm-hmm.
or you have to feed them chickens or beef or things like that, which aren't really natural to their diet. They're not stocking chickens. They'll eat birds and they'll eat mice. Right.
That's
what their diet is comprised of.
They are carnivores. That's what they're designed for. You cannot do that.
Try.
No.
But I raised a kitten on just the little smelts, frozen smelts,
mm-hmm.
frozen on board,
mm-hmm.
and gutted, and you had the raw food with the spine and everything.
Yep.
So it was good.
Bones.
And you never saw a healthier cat.
I bet.
People told me, oh, no, you can't do that. You know, this salt and kidneys and all this sort of stuff.
Yeah.
I never saw a healthier cat in my life.
Well, that's very good. I mean, I wouldn't recommend feeding only fish, but... yeah. Well, that was lucky. That was very good. Yeah. And some cats, you know...
Health problem.
Yeah. Some live on rats and mice outside.
Sure.
We use...
well, they can't live on rats.
A couple different... Well, outdoor cats do.
No kidding.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Because they're big.
They're big.
I saw a dead one just this morning.
Yeah, they're huge.
Yeah. Mice are more a better prey, I guess,
yeah,
for the cats.
But you don't have companies making food out of mice. So, yeah, we do. We use a lot of raw diet, actually, and it is a very good product. I researched it before we started using it.
What's the name of it?
Club Canine.
Club Canine.
And they make dog and cat food, and it's frozen. It's flash frozen.
What are some of the ingredients?
Well, all different types of meat. Buffalo, chicken.
Do they classify it as organic or not?
Some of it is, some of it isn't. So they get their most. They get if you do completely organic, you can't feasibly do it. You know,
because
people can't afford that.
Uh-huh.
You know, but they do provide that. They have ostrich. They have
on
there's
the hand,
all sorts of farms.
Yeah,
you know, unfortunate.
Then you're starting to kill ostriches.
Yeah, I know.
Cats.
I know.
What's the trade?
I know.
It's pretty ridiculous.
It's sad.
Yeah.
But anyway, chicken, lamb, cows, you know, the whole thing.
Of course, when you buy, if you bought chicken for yourself, if you're a meat eater, injured, and you could give a portion of that to the cat.
And
that would be fairly cheap, wouldn't it?
Raw bones.
If you put it in a can and stuff like that, it starts to... You know, the price starts to climb, right?
So well, and it's processed. It loses a lot of its good.
That too.
So, yes, raw bones are good for animals, not cooked bones. Never cooked bones. They get in their intestines and kill them. But raw bones, we give wingtips, things like that, you know.
They become compacted in the... Do they?
They break down if they're raw.
But if they're cooked...
Cooked bones splinter.
Oh, it's the cooked ones that splinter. I would have thought they would
and
be
perforate.
Soft and they wouldn't splinter, but they are.
Okay. Excuse me, Karen.
Yes.
We have somebody on the phone with a question. If you put on those headphones,
oh boy.
You can hear the person who's on the phone, and I'll put them on the air right now.
Okay.
Hi.
Hi.
If this question goes beyond you to the listeners, anybody that's listening, I wanted some information about cat spaying, and I had a kitty, and we had her spayed, and it seemed like a really major operation when she came back from the vet, you know, and I saw her all stitched up and shaved and stuff, and she was, like, really laid back, like, but it hit me then that it's quite an operation, and do they know how to do tying the tubes on cats instead of doing hysterectomies?
I think you could probably find somebody to do that. I don't know, you know, it would probably be costly. It's a good idea. It is a hysterectomy. They do get over it within about a week. We use two clinics that do wonderful operations and really support the cat in its recovery, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's absolutely necessary. It's way harder on them to be producing litter after litter.
Mm-hmm.
The males... they're back to dancing around the next day. The females, yeah, they do take a little bit more time, but now what they have is dissolving stitches, so you don't have to go back in and get stitches taken out, and they're easier on the cat.
Mm-hmm.
And they use good painkillers and things on them. We also use Animal Wellness Hospital, and they use holistic means of treating them for pain, too. I wouldn't let that deter anybody from getting their cat fixed.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you need to plan it so you could maybe be around and you know, baby her for a few days. But it's certainly you know, it's much better than allowing kitten after kitten to be born into a world where there's too many.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Well, thanks, and if you hear more on it, bring it to us.
We'll try and put it on our website if we hear of anybody doing that. Absolutely.
Okay, yes, and send it out to us people that don't have websites yet.
Oh, okay.
Okay.
We'll have to get it on Animal Voices,
mm-hmm,
Karen,
mm-hmm.
When something like that comes up. Now, I'm wondering if there's any reason to be optimistic that the problem is going to diminish.
I wish I could say that I am optimistic. Right now, every year I think, okay, we've done a lot of trapping through the winter. We've done a lot of clearing up. Yards where we do trapping, spaying, neutering of 20-plus cats, you know, 30-plus cats. And you think, okay, we're getting ahead, and everybody else is trapping and doing this too. Maybe this year will be better. But for the last 2 years, 700 kittens, you know, it's ridiculous. It's cruel, and it's not seemingly not getting better. It takes a shift in people's, like, you don't see dogs anymore running loose. There's been a shift from what it was in the, say, 60s when I was a kid. So what we're hoping for is that people will start realizing that there are places, if they can't deal with their young cat, they don't drop them on the street to have a horrible life, that they don't adopt a cat until they think it through. Do they have the proper lifestyle for a cat, or would it be better to foster, or would it be better to just not get anything? And it costs, you know, there's costs. You need to get pet insurance if in case of some kind of horrible illness or accident. So I can't say that I'm optimistic. We're all just, it becomes so sad. Middle summer, spring, I just can't believe how many we get. And it's heartbreaking to us who see it. People don't realize how many cats are living on the street until we talk about it on shows like this and say, please stop letting your cats have kittens. Don't add to it. You may be able to get a home for your kittens, but that takes the home away from all the others that need homes.
Yes, and if it's a quick find at the local mall or somewhere, then the children just want a pet, and the mother says, well, okay, I guess so, and they pick it up, and then they don't have any provision made at all for the cat.
The other thing that people don't understand is that there is a kitten season. So they're looking for kittens in the winter. They're saying there's no kittens in Vancouver. So they get a kitten, and then they think, well, I'll let my cat have kittens because there's no kittens in Vancouver, but they're letting their cat have kittens right when everybody else is and when we're getting them in. So it is erroneous. There is a kitten season. It's spring through fall, and you don't get them generally in the winter and fewer in the fall, you know. So people need to really think about the big picture. You know, saying I can get homes for them all, that's not good enough. There's too many.
Well, thank you for that, Karen. Now, is there anything that you would like to mention before we review the ways of getting information about your group?
I guess just, you know, check often into our website. We'll give it again. We got a lot of help this year from Tysols. They put out a free calendar, and the rescues all had a page in a lot of the rescues in the calendar, which was a lovely calendar. You know, we get help from a lot of different places. Tysols helps us. Our vets help us. Firemaster, Pine Pellets. Oh, that's something. Don't put clumping litter in with kittens. Very dangerous. They lick it off their feet. They eat it. It clumps in their gut and kills them. So you use, what we use is Pine Pellet litter.
Very
and
good stuff. I've used
cheaper, and you can get a 40-pound bag for $5 at Rona, and you know, or at the pet stores, it's cheaper than the other. It's biodegradable, of course, and it's much easier to use and safer, much safer for the animals.
And so, it's that great deodorant too.
Yeah, I have lots of cats in my house, as you can imagine, and use huge, great, big bins for litter boxes, and it just doesn't. It keeps the smell way down.
What do you do with the dirty litter?
Some people compost it. If you're using the compost on food, you can't do that. It goes to the dump, but it comes apart. You know, it's better than clumping litter, which turns to a rock when it's taken there.
Right?
Yeah. A lot of the poop you can put in your toilet if you're using pine litter. You can flush it, and then it gets treated. Because you can put little bits of it in the toilet.
You can scoop it out?
Yep. And put it in the toilet, and it flushes away and gets treated like everything else.
So the whole thing could I mean, just the litter as well?
No, you can't put the litter down the toilet. It blocks up your toilet. Very dangerous. Don't do that. I made the mistake. It's not worth it.
What's that stuff made out of?
Yeah. It's pine sawdust. And it's made into, like, it looks like a rabbit pellet. It's little pellets. So, it's great stuff.
Right. What about vaccinations? You mentioned that, and you vaccinate your
we,
cats.
We,
the necessity for that? And are you aware of the flaring
absolutely.
Up of the controversy?
Yes.
Right?
Oh, we've been on that since
that
we started.
Cancer is being...
Yes. We recommend the kitten shots and no more. Absolutely, I don't recommend rabies. That's controversial, but, you know, especially for indoor cats, they're inside. A bat is not going to fly onto your balcony, even though vets say that.
There are other carriers of rabies.
Yes, but if you do a search on rabies, there's been maybe rabies in Stanley Park once in the last many, many years.
Well, I think we have another question on the line.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi there. I heard you talking about various kinds of litter, and I just wanted to mention one that I've been pretty happy with. It's made from corn cobs.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's quite expensive,
but
it works very well. It clumps pretty well, and it's far less dusty. It's much lighter than the clay, and, of course, it goes down the toilet, you know,
perfectly
well.
You can put little bits of it,
I've been using it for a couple of years now, and when I scoop out the box into, like, a large margarine tub kind of thing, I dump the whole thing in one flush. It's never jammed up yet.
I'm glad it hasn't.
It doesn't clump nearly as hard as the clay.
That's right.
Does.
It breaks up in
pretty
water.
Much as soon as it hits the water, it just disintegrates and it goes down beautifully. I've been really happy with it. The only thing is I haven't seen the pine pellets, but it's nowhere near as cheap as that. But boy, it works terrifically. Yeah. And there's a couple of brands out now, apparently.
Yeah, there are. That we recommend that. There's several that are that type of material, corn or wood or whatever.
Yeah.
There's the paper one. I find it doesn't keep the smell down as much.
Oh yeah.
But I absolutely do not recommend clay clumping or silica.
Yeah,
that
no,
gives
I was
me
really
the creeps.
Glad to get rid
That's
of that
really
awful
weird
stuff.
Yeah,
once I found out what it was all about, you know, and I'm breathing it too every time I, dig out the litter box.
That's right.
But I don't worry about smell on mine because I have a dedicated fan that sucks the air out of the cat box and blows it out through a hole in the wall 24
man,
hours a day.
Oh man, you got it made. Actually, I want our kittens to come to you.
Well, it broke down last week and it was like a full emergency. Like, we gotta fix that right now.
How often do you change your litter? Because there's always the collection of urine at the bottom, of course, so you have to be fairly on top of that, I guess.
Well, I find with the corn cob stuff, it doesn't really go down to the bottom very often, and it clumps well enough that it's quite easy to dig out.
And they like a nice deep litter box. They like digging.
Yeah. Oh,
so
absolutely.
I use great big bins rather than a litter box. I use a great big Rubbermaid bin.
That sounds like a splendid idea.
Yeah,
I might switch to that. Anyway, I'm really enjoying the show. It's lots of great information. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, thank you for calling.
Do cats need to drink water?
Cats do need to always have fresh water. You need to clean the bowl daily. You don't want it to get all that kind of yucky in the bottom.
I fed my cat fish, of course. It never, ever drank. I never saw it drink.
I was going to say, raw-fed cats do not drink as much as cats that are eating processed food. We do not recommend feeding dry food. Lots of urinary tract problems with that. Now, the vaccine issue, I did want to say, we don't recommend after the kitten shots. There's lots of information out there now. They're finding that the biggest cause of illness and cancers and death in our pets is bad food and over-vaccination. So people need to do their research on that. It was the companies that invented vaccines that said, okay, it works. You need to do it every year. Now, that's like giving our kids measles shots every year. It's ridiculous. And what they're finding now is it's good for at least 7 years. You can get what's called a titer test done. Titer. And that will show you what your cats are lacking in protection for, you know. So they're finding that at least 7 years and probably the life of the cat. My cats, every about 5 years, I maybe get a distemper shot for my cats just because I have so many ill animals that come in and out of my house. I feel I have to protect them. But that's, you know, long apart.
Now we have one more question.
Sure.
It'll have to be the last one, I believe. Now, Alan?
Keep going. Go ahead.
Hello? Hello?
Sorry. Okay, now.
Okay.
Hi.
Yes, would you have to ask your question, please?
Yes. I guess you have some adult cats then for adoption, too,
we
do you?
We do. We always have adult cats because, of course, we have these young mums and older mums. We get mums off the street that are old and they need love. They thrive on love. So absolutely. And older cats, you know, they need homes too, and that's why I'm always happy to take some of the younger ones from the shelters, because then the older cats get looked at. They need those homes, and we would much rather place, you know, a couple of older cats than eight kittens, because we can always find homes for kittens. But the older ones, and then you know what you've got. You know what the personality is like, if it will fit into your home. And we do, you know, our foster homes know these cats, so they can tell you what they're all about. And absolutely, on our website, we have pictures of the cats that are looking for homes. Some of them are special needs in that they've been feral or they've been mistreated, and they need patience and love, but you get it back tenfold, hundredfold when you look after a cat like that.
And one more question?
Mm-hmm.
If I was to volunteer with this trapping sort of stuff, what do I do? Like, what sort of things would I do?
We have a trapping coordinator that is actually Urban Lions, and she will train you. And oftentimes she needs somebody to ride along with her, because we certainly don't want one person out doing the trapping at night. If you have a car, it can be as simple as meeting up with her and taking the cat to the vet. We go to a vet that's open late with these cats from the street, and or transporting them back and forth. Or she will train you in teams to go out and do trapping. Trapping is not cruel. It is humane. We have doors, humane traps. The cat goes in the door, steps on something to go after some yummy tuna or barbecue chicken, and the door closes. And we take them in, we cover them, we treat them gently, we cover them, we take them in, get them fixed, and then post-op them. We don't turn them back on the street right away. If we have a place for them to be fed, they go back on the street. If not, we have shelters they go to. We never kill an animal. We never do. We are no-kill rescue.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, thank you for that.
And absolutely, please, if people want to get involved and just try it out with trapping, please go to our website and send us a note or call our line, and we'll get you in touch with people that are doing the trapping. It's so badly needed. We get calls every week. We get calls for help.
Now, maybe we could give the message line out again, Karen.
Absolutely. And this, remember, this is a message line. So just leave very short information, your phone, your name, and what you're interested in. It's 604-731-2913. If you don't have a computer, you can leave messages about trapping, about fostering, about adopting there. If you have an emergency, there is an emergency number on there, I think, I hope. Well, or you can call the SPCA and they'll turn you over to us if you have kittens or something.
And the website that people can get all kinds of information mm-hmm. from, could we just repeat that?
It's www.orphan, O-R-P-H-A-N, kitten rescue.
All one word.
.com. Our shortened name is Vokra. So if you hear people talking about Vokra, we invented our name so you could shorten it and not have to write all that out.
Uh-huh.
That's our shortened name. And so if you see that we're going to be, we do a lot of talks. We go to Pet Expo. We go to lots of animal places and do talks and try and help people with their problems with their kittens and things.
Yeah, and you are always trying to raise funds, of course. And the best way to do that?
You can mail in through our website. You can do it through PayPal. If you go to the website and look, or you can phone and say, I want to make a donation, please let me know how to do that and leave a message and we'll get back to you.
Good.
Boy, will we get back to you. We need it badly.
Okay, that's 604-731-2913.
That's right. Message line.
And that one last thing, mm-hmm. Karen, you have a garage sale coming up. Maybe you could just mention
that. Yes, we will be having it in May. I'm going to be doing my, if I have to get time for this, but my new newsletter on the front page of our website, and I will be announcing what date the yard sale will be. We take all kinds of things. It's always really successful. We have hot dog coffee. We have people come with a coffee van, and it's loads of fun. We all have a good time and get together and make money for the kittens.
That's wonderful. Thank you so much. You've been listening to an interview with Karen Duncan, who is president of the Vancouver Orphan Kitten Rescue Association. Wonderful information you've given us, and I certainly hope that this message of controlling the cat population mm-hmm. through spaying and neutering will reach a good, positive conclusion before too long.
Yes, yeah. We hope so,
okay,
too.
Okay, thanks for coming in.
And thank you very much, Karen.
Thank you.
And you're listening to Animal Voices on CFRO 102.7 FM. What's the time there, Alan? We got 5 minutes left? Or three minutes?
The time now here on Co-op Radio is 12:54, exactly.
Okay, well, we'll just have a little item here. There's time until 4th of April 2006 to comment on a petition to the FDA, the Food and Drug Administration, which aims at removing from the market the natural alternative to pharmaceutical hormone replacement, which is shown to have serious adverse effects lately. So we need your help. Wyeth Pharmaceuticals, the makers of Premarin, which is pregnant mare urine and the hormone derived from it, and the product PremPro, which are both drugs extracted from the urine of pregnant mares and used in hormone replacement therapy. Wyeth Pharmaceuticals, the maker of the drug, has asked the FDA to eliminate competition from bioidentical, that is to say, plant-based hormones, which are a more natural alternative to these drugs. A Dr. Stephen F. Hotze, that's H-O-T-Z-E, I guess I'm slaughtering his name, but it's Hotze as far as I can make out. This doctor has the details, and he's asking for help to convince the Food and Drug Administration not to touch the natural alternatives to pharmaceutical hormone replacement. And his call for action, the FDA comments period on the petition closed on April 2006, and it's in this article here, which he writes, and he says, dear friends, Viath Pharmaceutical wants the FDA to take away your right to choose safe, effective, and natural bioidentical hormones and regulate your choice of health treatments. We haven't until April 4th, 2006 to stop them. Viath is requesting that the FDA effectively prohibit compounding pharmacies from providing bioidentical hormones to their patients. This would mean that you would no longer be able to get your bioidentical hormones from us or from anyone else. Now, who is us? I guess that Good Doctors has a group. Since 2002, the Women's Health Initiative, which demonstrated that Viath's products, Premarin and Prempro, cause a significant increase in breast cancer, blood clots to the lungs, heart attacks, and strokes, Viath has seen a dramatic decline in the sales of these counterfeit hormones. So their financial reports, which are available online at www.viath.com, indicate the following significant decline in the sales of Premarin family products. In 2002, they sold $2 billion worth of product. In 2003, $1 billion, $275 million. And in 2004, right down to $888 million. So this represents a 68% decline in sales between 2002, and that's all the time we have. This is John Pranger for Animal Voices.
Good afternoon. This is Marge Adams.
And we'll be back next week. Coming up next is Deconstructing Dinner with Kootenai Radio and John... What was his name?
John.
John. That's good enough.